Good. So this talk is for me, unlike any other talk I've given. You know, I'm not going to talk about a particular result, but I want to extend an invitation to you. And the invitation is to think about a new question. And the invitation is really to somehow start a new field, ultimately, if this question is successful. So, you know, what I'm interested in is quantum gravity. Okay. And if you think that quantum is one and gravity is two, then whatever this theory of quantum gravity should be, it should be a theory where one and two are put together in somehow, you know, the same footing, more or less. Now, what it seems to me we have been doing for the past 100 years, and what I've been doing as a worker, and we're all doing, more or less, is that somehow we are not trying to put one and two together. What we are doing so far is putting one on top of two, right? So what most of us are doing is really that we're trying to quantize gravity, right? So behind this idea that quantum mechanics may be more fundamental and we need to modify gravity, you know, by the quantum. But when you look at it and you say that, well, you know, that's one way to get to quantum gravity, but since quantum and gravity is the unification of two things, it's clear that there's another way to obtain quantum gravity, is to ask the, you know, the question of what does it mean to, you know, gravitizing the quantum. Or gravitize the quantum, if you want. And this is really what I want to talk about. I want us to start thinking and start gravitizing the quantum and stop this 100 years, I don't know, a draw in this reflection. So to check, I try to check whether, you know, we have been thinking about these things. And of course, the whole source of information is Google. So there's clearly, if you type this expression, you know, you're going to get a number of hits which is radically, radically different. So if you type gravitizing the quantum, there's only one hit, but it's a paper I wrote with my two colleagues in you know, here, which is Rob Lee and George Minnick. Now, if you type gravitization of the quantum, you find that we're not the first one to think about it. And as usual in quantum gravity, anytime you think you have a fundamentality about quantum gravity, there's always one guy that has scooped you before, and this guy often happened to be Roger Penrose. Right? So Penrose has a paper which carried this title of gravitation of quantum gravity. So I agree with his analysis and why we should do that. What I'm going to talk about is going to be at the end kind of very different from what he proposed, but I think we are in the same ballpark. So. Okay, so why are we not trying to gravitize the quantum? I mean, first, the name is hard to pronounce, maybe, or it's unusual. I tried to translate it in French, it doesn't even work, but that's not a good reason. The good reason is that, you know, when you ask, what does that mean? Okay? And that's the question. What does that mean? Okay, so if we want to somehow reverse the usual logic about quantum gravity, we have to, you know, go towards a formulation of what the quantum is and what gravity is, where they're really on the same footing, right? If really the goal is to merge the two together, we should kind of have a formulation where at least individually they are formulated in the same way, okay? So, you know, the usual problem is that gravity is geometrical. And quantum mechanics, you know, is algebraic. Okay? And when people think about quantizing gravity, they somehow try to take this geometrical object and make it algebraic, roughly speaking, you know, by putting quantum stuff. So the reverse thing is to do the reverse, is to think about, so get rid of quantum mechanics of as something of, you know, an algebraic object and make it geometrical. Okay? So this is what we're going to talk about. This is not the first time this has been done. There is instances of that in the literature, and we're going to use that type of instances. These two instances where you can think about quantum mechanics as geometrical, one is called, well, it's called geometrical quantum mechanics. And there's an absolutely remarkably beautiful paper, one of the most beautiful papers I've ever read personally on quantum mechanics after the Born-Jordan paper, is the Ashtekar-Schilling paper. Right. And then there's, you know, this line of thought has been followed by Keble, and Gibbons has been an advocate. To some extent, Weinberg also has thought about that. But somehow it's kind of, you know, not the dominant point of view on quantum mechanics. Now, there's something else which is different from geometrical quantum mechanics, carries kind of the same name. This is the way, if you talk to a mathematician and you ask him, what do you think quantum mechanics is? So mathematicians have developed their own view about quantum mechanics. And this view of quantum mechanics by mathematicians is very different from the view of quantum mechanics by physicists. And it's called the geometric quantization. Okay? This is quantum mechanics view by mathematicians. So somehow, you know, these are the only instance I know of quantum mechanics put into the same footing, same realm as gravity, a geometrical footing. So So if we try to unify these two things, let's try to think, what do they have in common? Okay, so I mean, what they have in common is one is h bar, one is g. Okay, what they have in common, the main point I want to make is that both of them points toward something of, you know, unification of phase space geometry. So why am I saying that? Well, you suppose that I have a fundamental length scale, let's say Planck length, and a fundamental energy scale, epsilon. So we know very well that h bar is made out of these two length scales by being lambda epsilon. Okay? So in some sense, and we know very well, we're used to that somehow the proper formulation of geometry, you know, of quantum mechanics is somehow in the language of phase spaces. And quantization of these objects there. So the underlying geometrical object behind quantum mechanics is clearly phase spaces, and it comes from the fact that, you know, you have a scale that carry an energy of space and a scale of energy. Okay, now let's look at G Newton. G Newton is of the form lambda over epsilon. Okay, so G Newton is also a scale that depends on the unification of length and energy, but a different type. It's more like a conversion factor, if you think about it, more like the speed of light, if you want, okay, that allow us to, you know, these guys allow us to talk about term dp dq divided by h bar. If I think of it as a conversion factor, and I think that one is, you know, like C, which is a, you know, length over time, allow us to put together time and space. Having a conversion factor between length and energy allow us to put together objects like dp square plus, you know, dq square, if you think about it. Okay, so I'm going to justify these two objects here, these two geometrical objects. So here what I'm alluding to is the following thing, is that, let me start by abstracting somehow some elements of quantum mechanics and some elements of gravity that has to do with phase space. So here when I talk about phase space, I have to be precise, I'm not talking about the quantum gravitational phase space. I'm talking about the phase space of probes, of physical probes. So let's say my probes are going to be particle. You can think they are strings. There's something. So I don't talk about the phase space of the metric and its conjugate momentum. I'm talking about space-time as I see by a bunch of probes. Okay, there's these two points of view on gravity. Either you start with the metric or you start with the probe. So here I'm taking the probe point of view. And when I talk about the phase space, I really talk about the phase space of probe in a theory of quantum gravity. Okay, so now, the phase space of probe, what I'm going to show you is that in some sense, quantum, you know, that the phase space of probes naturally carry two metrics. Okay, so there's not, so this phase space of probe is bimetric. And one metric is coming from quantum mechanics, and one metric is coming from quantum gravity. So the phase space of probe is bimetric. There's two metrics. One is going to be called eta, and this one is going to be a neutral metric. Neutral means it has a signature dd, plus, 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 and minus, minus, minus. And the other one is called a generalized metric. Generalized metric, and it has signature 2d, or in the Lorentzian case, 2d minus 1, 1, 2. Okay, signature. So there's a neutral metric and generalized metric. And essentially, these two metrics follows from the two principle I extract, is that quantum mechanics as a fundamental principle, which is a bond duality principle. Bond duality principle says essentially that, you know, the rotation, the change of basis is irrelevant. The change of polarization in quantum mechanics is irrelevant. You can work in P basis, X basis. It doesn't matter. Physics is independent of that. Okay? And then gravity leads to another principle. I'm going to abstract one other principle here. So change of polarization. Is irrelevant. Now, gravity, behind gravity, there's the notion of, that in some sense, there's a notion of absolute locality. Okay? Absolute locality, as we coined it with Lee, is the statement that all probes agree on what space-time is. Right? It's such an obvious statement that you don't think about it, but it's space-time is equal for all probes, okay? It's obvious that in GR you start with the space-time and you stop worrying about it. Anyway, and the main idea, which is due to Born a long time ago, is that these two principles are in drastic conflict with each other, okay? So you cannot reconcile quantum mechanics and gravity because you cannot put together Born duality and absolute locality. Okay, so let me see what does that mean. So I start with a phase space. So phase space is P, I'm going to call omega a symplectic form. So now let me use the duality principle. So if I use the duality principle, it means that I can rotate, oh my God, okay. Well, you're going to get on the after talk, that's okay. So I can rotate my basis of, let's say, I start with the polarization PQ, and you know I can change the polarization, take P plus Q, P minus Q, et cetera, et cetera. Among all the possible and a transformation I can do, there's one which is our favorite one, which is Fourier transform, right? The one that transforms P into Q and Q into P. Okay, so let's call this transformation I, okay? So I see that this transformation has two properties. First, I square is equal to minus 1. And then it's a unitary transformation, so it commutes with the symplectic structure. Okay? So it preserves the symplectic structure. It's a symplectic transformation. Okay? So essentially, bond duality tells me that naturally, phase space has an I. It has a complex structure. Complex structure is an object here. It's a map on the tangent space of phase space, which square to minus 1. Now, if I have such a complex structure, which is compatible, I necessarily can construct the first metric. If I construct omega I, then let me check. If I compute the transpose of these guys, it's going to be I transpose, omega transpose. Okay, omega is anti-symmetric, so this is the same as minus I transpose omega. Now, if I use this property, this is the same as I transpose omega I square, and if I use the last property, this is the same as omega I. Okay, so this object is a metric, it's symmetric, and you can check its signature. Essentially, this metric is going to be H, or let's say the ds square of H. It's a metric on phase space, which is on dp square plus dq square. So, you know, as soon as you have quantum mechanics, phase space inherits a metrical structure on it, which comes from having a complex structure of quantum mechanics. So the additional information that you have from quantum mechanics is this metric. And the main argument is that I won't have the time to develop, but you can argue that this metric directly descends from the Born rule, from the probability metric. Okay? So this metrical structure is the leftover of quantum mechanics at the phase space level. Okay, so now what about absolute locality? What do I mean by that? Or what do you usually mean when you do field theory? Is that, you know, this is what I say. When I do gravity, I use the notion of a space-time, and I don't even question it, right? And this space-time is somehow the things where everything propagates into. Okay, so but now if I step back and I say, what is a space-time from a phase space point of view? Okay, so phase space is an object where I have, you know, P and X together, and what is a space-time? Space-time is a slice of phase space, which is half-dimensional, so phase space is dimension 2D, space-time is going to be half its dimension, and it's characterized by the fact that it's a Lagrangian, so let's call L. A space-time is a Lagrangian manifold. Okay, so Lagrangian submanifold, which means essentially that the symplectic structure restricted on that guy is equal to zero. This is what we mean by space-time. Okay. Good. And in gravity, when you look at the phase space for probes, the phase space for probes are always the form being of T star of the manifold. So clearly it's a phase space where there's always a preferred slice here. Okay? So gravity, in some sense, the tension with quantum mechanics, that gravity says there's a preferred polarization. It's the X polarization. You know, there's no notion, you can talk about phi of X, but you cannot talk about phi of P. There's no notion of Fourier transformation. You cannot do the rotation I was doing before. There's absolutely no notion of Fourier transformation in a curve setting, unless the geometry is homogeneous. If it's absolutely curved, you're gone. So bound duality is out of the window. And then you cannot implement the principle of quantum mechanics, because we just said that bound duality leads to this metric, which is somehow the probability metric. Okay. So, you know, when we do physics, we assume we have a preferred space-time, a Lagrangian submanifold. We also assume that we know what momentum space is. Otherwise, we cannot, you know, analyze experiments, particle experiments. So a momentum space is a Lagrangian manifold, and it's, you know, transversal. Transversal to L, which essentially means that my full phase space, tangent space, can be decomposed as L plus L tilde. Okay? Of course, there's nothing that is at the same time space and energy. Okay, so this thing is called a B Lagrangian. Okay, so when we do physics, we naturally assume that we have a B Lagrangian. Most of the time, we assume that this B Lagrangian is a kinematical structure, God-given, eternal, non-dynamical, flat, whatever it is. And we don't talk about it. But it's there, always there. So now what I want to argue is that what you can show is that the choice of B Lagrangian that we have to do if we want to do physics, it's equivalent, a B Lagrangian is equivalent to the choice of a neutral metric. Eta IB. And the proof goes as follows. You can, let's say, I can define something which I call K, which shows that on L, it's plus 1. If I have a B Lagrangian, on L tilde, it's minus 1. So this object has the property of being k square equal plus 1. It's called a real structure. But it's also anti-commute with the symplectic structure. And for the same reason of the previous computation, you can show that these guys, eta omega k, is a metric. Okay? And essentially now the polarization becomes the null cone, the null subspace of this metric. So this matrix gives us some kind of causal structure. So a choice of polarization or B Lagrangian is essentially the same thing as a choice of causal structure on phase space. Okay, so let me wrap it up here by saying, okay, let's go back to the first thing. So if we go back to what happened in quantum mechanics. In quantum mechanics, what do we have? We have that H, the generalized metric, it's the probability metric. It's linear, it's flat. Okay, so it's fixed and flat. It's totally rigid, doesn't move. Okay, now eta is the choice of polarization. Well, you know, by the duality principle says that eta is free. Eta is free to fluctuate as much as you want. It won't change any bits of quantum mechanics. Okay, now what about gravity? Oh, in gravity, what do we say? We say, well, let's think about this H metric. I said the H metric is dq squared per dp squared. But now let me take a probe, which is a molecule, an electron, any type of probe. You can compute what is dq in Planck unit. dq divided by dp is 10 to the 45. Okay? So for most local probe we use to talk about space-time, the fluctuation in q direction is where, you know, it doesn't matter. So essentially this metric for all practical purpose is a metric on space-time. Okay? So in gravity, I would say, what do we have? We have eta, we have a preferred polarization. This is what we call space-time. Eta is fixed, and you can check that for T star, it is flat. Okay? But H, because H is the space-time metric, is arbitrary or dynamical. Okay? So, good. So when we talk about quantizing gravity, in some sense we're working here. We're trying, it's clear that quantum gravity is going to be a guy where both H and eta are allowed to do whatever they want. And, you know, I mean, and constrained by each other. So they allow now to be, you know, they no longer, you relax the condition of them being flat. This is the only way you can put the two together, right? You cannot demand something to be flat and to be curved at the same time. There's no way. So clearly quantum gravity is putting the time together. So of course, you know, there's two ways to do it. Either you work here, which is quantizing gravity, or you work there. So what does it mean to, work there? It means that now I want, working there means that I start from the framework of quantum mechanics where the duality principle is implemented, the choice of polarization doesn't matter a priori. And then I want to change my phase space metric, my generalized metric, to be curved. But changing my phase space metric to be curved, as I say, and I don't have time to explain, because this phase space metric depends from the Born rule. You know, flatness means that somehow the space which is behind is linear. So the flatness is tied up with the linearity of quantum mechanics. So demanding that H become curved is somehow demanding, you have to demand a relaxation of the Born rule and the linearity of the Born rule. The fact that it is a simple sum of squares. And I have not have time to talk about how you do that. Thank you.